You've tuned in to a special edition of the Roundtable Podcast. The Roundtable Podcast finds utopia.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to a special edition of the Roundtable Podcast. The Roundtable Podcast finds utopia.
Yes, indeed, we did. And actually, utopia kind of found us. I didn't realize this thing even existed, and I can't believe I didn't. But somebody I was following on Twitter, I think it was the Auror's Tale people, actually. Had mentioned that they're going to be in Nashville. And I'm going, ooh, they're going to be in Nashville. Where are they going to be? And they're going to be at UtopiaCon. And I'm going, wait, there's a con? So, of course, I'm clicking links. I'm checking it out. And sure enough, it was the first year ever of UtopiaCon. And it's Utopia spelled with a capital Y, capital A at the end.
Right. For YA.
Exactly. That's the focus of the con was exclusively on not only paranormal YA, which is just awesomeness all by itself, but it was also a supporting female authors of paranormal YA. So it was a one.
Excellent.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. It was an affirmation and a reinforcement of female authors in the genre, and also an amazing fan fest for anybody who is into YA. And I thought, you know, I think I found this out like on Thursday, and the con was like Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
So I'm sending emails going, oh, crap.
How do I get in?
Exactly. And I connected with Janet Wallace, who was the con director and evil genius behind Utopia. And she guided me. She was very helpful. And I went in on Saturday, and I went in with my trusty iPad and my iRig mic like I did at Balticon.
Fabulous.
Yes. And scored some great interviews. So, and Brian, I wanted to share these with you.
Cool.
Because neither of us, I mean, YA is not our wheelhouse, either of us.
Right. You right. I get exposed to little, you know, glimpses of it because of the age level that I teach. But I need to be much more of an expert on it so that I can bring more kids to reading.
Yeah. Know? Absolutely.
So, so this is great.
Yeah, and we'll hear several authors giving their perspectives on YA. So we will be educated. And along the way, you, dear listeners, can get a glimpse into a facet of the genre that maybe you hadn't seen before or weren't aware of. So let me lead off. I was delighted to actually sit down for about 15 minutes with, as I mentioned, Janet Wallace, the director, the person whose idea it was to start this thing in the first place. And she's an amazing woman I'll let her talk about just how amazing she is.
Sure.
So here's our 15 minutes with Janet Wallace. Hello, friends. I'm here at the second day of Utopia, the paranormal YA con, inaugural year, first year, and I'm sitting here with Janet Wallace, the creator, the instigator, the evil genius behind Utopia, Utopia Con. Janet, my first question is, there are a lot of writing cons out there. There's fantasy cons, there's sci-fi cons, there's so on and so forth. You have gone very specific with the core of this one being paranormal, YA, and female writers. Mm-hmm. And what was your motivation behind that? What inspired you to create such a very specific and very awesome venue for that specific writer and that format?
You know, it's funny that you asked that. My whole background is in marketing and advertising, so I'd love to tell you some really sophisticated reason behind my niching of this event and all of that. But honestly, it was completely for selfish reasons. I when I was building my own business and spending a lot of time doing a lot of putting in systems and structures and admin and all of those things and working really long hours, I needed a way to escape at night. I had my first iPad, I had the Kindle app, and I discovered these amazing female authors, and I ended up devouring over 145 books in a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, so let's do the math.
And I still had time.
3 days you're consuming a book.
And yeah, pretty much. And I really started falling in love with these women who were creating these stories that were helping me escape the really, you know, heavy masculine systems and structures, energies that I was putting into my daily life. And I said, I have got to meet these women. They have completely inspired me. And that's really, that was really the impetus for Utopia. It was like either that or I spend a ton of money and use all my advantage miles to fly around the world to meet them. So I thought I'd make them all come to me. So what's a woman to do who's putting together a business of her own, but to create a convention as well?
Very cool.
No pressure. So that was really it.
Okay. So when someone comes to UtopiaCon, what can they expect?
What can they expect? Well, our mission was to really take a chainsaw to the velvet rope. We really wanted to tear down the walls between the fans and the authors, because what we really discover is, and what I was discovering when I was reading is, you know, you could be a fan one day reading all these books, and then you could, your heart could have that hunger, and you have a story inside you that you want to tell. And I just wanted to show the fans that if you've got something in your heart you want to say, if there's characters living inside your head that have to get out, that you can be a fan one day, a writer the next, and a published author the day after that. You know, and that's really a spectacular kind of, it's living the dream, you know? And so when they come here, it's about collaboration. I was very specific, and I wanted a lift as you climb mentality bred in the walls of the convention space. When one of us wins, all of us win. There's plenty of room at the top. It's not like readers only read two authors, you know? I devour books, and I want to read more. I can't get enough of vampires, werewolves, angels, demons, you name it, ghosts. The more, the better. I mean, I'm always looking and hungry for more. So there's plenty of room for all of it out there. It's not like there's limited space up in the sky and the stars. So I really wanted to foster a sense of unity and community. And when one person gets to the top of the mountain, I want them reaching down and grabbing the other person that's climbing and saying, hey, guess what? You're coming with me. And that's exactly what's been happening. And I could not be happier. And the authors have really just taken it, and the community's grown. And, you know, I'm getting all gushy, but.
Well, you've divided the panels, the panel offerings of the con into two specific tracks. Could you speak about that just a little bit and let our listeners know what type of content is being discussed here?
Sure. For the aspiring authors and the established authors who are here, I wanted to give them something where they can improve on their craft, improve on the business of being a self-published, indie published, or even traditionally published author. A lot, you know, even in the times that we live in, even if you are published by the big six, a lot of the marketing does fall on your own hands. And so I wanted to give them an opportunity to learn about editing, marketing, publishing options, pricing options, ways to get the word out there about your book, and really query letters, world building. So everything that you can imagine from the writing process and the business process, I wanted to have a track for those aspiring authors. The fan track is really, again, an attempt to encourage discussion between the fans and the authors. And if you live your life on Twitter at all, like I do, what you find is it's not everyone talking business. It's authors talking about vampire diaries and, you know, what hot guy they can see cast as their main character. So I wanted to have discussions that were just about that. You know, let's talk about paranormal and YA and what, you know, right now we're seeing a flurry of books being made into television shows and films all over the place, web series. It's just going bananas. And so I wanted the fans to be able to talk about, you know, with the authors about the stuff they love, the stuff that's kind of not as good as a book, mm-hmm. Sure. where they see it going, those kinds of things. So that, you know, that's one panel. Other of the fan panels are sort of power of the fans. I mean, authors wouldn't be where they are without the fans downloading the books, whether they're free, 99 cents, $1.99, $10.99. And we talked about how the fans have a lot of power and what their power is and how we can work together for the mutual benefit of all, really. And so there's different sessions in the fan track that really, a lot of great discussion. We had one of my favorites called Damsel in Distress versus Badass Babe, gender roles in YA. And it's really, it was a fabulous conversation about, are we perpetuating this damsel in distress myth, in my opinion?
Sure. How well attended was the panel?
It was very well attended. The discussion was amazing because it really was the audience and the panel discussing a really important issue. You know, are we creating really strong female characters? In fact, you know, Joss Whedon, who is an amazing creator of, you know, Firefly and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and
Avengers
director. Yeah, exactly. He, there's a quote where someone said, why do you always create strong female characters? And he says, because you keep asking me that question.
Good answer.
Yeah, and that's one of those fan track panels that it had to be done, and it will continue to be done until we don't need it anymore. So that's sort of why we did the fan and the author track.
That's a good answer too. That's an excellent answer. We're in day two of UtopiaCon. How's it been going so far?
Well, it's a dream come true for me. You know, Myra McIntyre, who is she's a Nashville resident, yay for us, but she also happens to be a fabulous paranormal YA author. She has a book called Hourglass and the sequel called Timepiece that just came out. She recently had her book optioned by one of the major studios out there. And she was our keynote speaker on day one, and she really set the tone. She actually reached out to a bunch of her very well-established author friends and had them send in pictures of them holding signs that said, you can do it. And it was really a speech of encouragement, and it brought the room to tears. Yay. But it set such a great tone and a great theme for the whole weekend of it. You really can do it. You absolutely can do it. And for me, being in day two of Utopia, you know, going from we can do this to we're totally doing this, you know, is amazing.
Fabulous affirmation of that very thing.
Is truly, truly amazing. And so I'm beyond words. And tonight we have the Utopia Awards and
the first annual, the first of many.
The first of many Utopia Awards, and they're hosted by a dear friend of mine, CMT host Katie Cook. And I just couldn't be happier.
What are you gauging the Utopia Awards? What's the criteria for being nominated and being awarded a utopia?
Oh, we'll have to coin that. I don't know. I'm not exactly. We'll have to figure out what we're going to coin the actual trophies as. But in our first year, we decided that in order to be nominated for a Utopia Award, you must have been a panelist or author here at the convention itself. So it was not open to the public to nominate. The nominees were nominated by their peers who were invited to this particular conference. Now, the voting was public. We did 1 week of voting that was absolutely open to the public online. So while the nominees were peer selected, the choice was all the fans. And so we will refine our criteria and the way that we do things in the future and keep getting better and better. But everyone who's nominated is beyond words spectacular. I can't wait to see who the winners are tonight.
I'm going to be asking a question of many of the authors here today, and I wanted to start off and ask you the question and get your opinion. There are many, many genres out there that can be written in that bring different things to the world, to the culture, to society. What do you feel does YA bring to the world? What is its message and what is its power?
That is such a great question, Dave. Oh my gosh. Okay. And I actually didn't really answer this part of one of your very first questions was why did you niche it specifically paranormal YA for women authors? Here's the thing.
Let's get down to it, shall we?
Let's get down to business. It's funny, when I actually told people that I wanted to do this conference, while the majority of people were amazingly supportive and it took on a life of its own right away, there's always a few people that are like, well, you know, it paranormal, why? I mean, it's so done. Vampires are so done. And it's just, you know, why are you doing it, you know? And again, it's like, does the world need another con?
The answer is a resounding yes.
Of course it does.
Yes.
And I, you know, they said, you know, paranormal YA, it's such a fad. And I said, really? You really truly believe that? Because, you know, are comic books a fad? as long as there's, you know, there's this tiny little convention called Comic-Con that's next week that is, it's been going strong for, you know, I wish I knew the actual decade or more.
Sure. Dragon Con.
Yeah, and as long as there are teenagers out there who are still looking for their firsts, their first kiss, their first boyfriend, their first encounter with a ghost or vampire.
Who isn't still looking for that?
As long as there are firsts that we want to live through a first time or we want to live through again as 40-something moms and whatever, and we've been there, done that, and we just miss the feeling and the rush of that first encounter, there will be readers of YA. So I don't think it's going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And paranormal YA, you know, I created it because I personally love it. You know, the timing seemed right. It is popular in mainstream media right now, but I don't necessarily think that's going to go anywhere anytime soon. I think that it's a generational thing, and as long as this generation's into it, UtopiaCon is going to be just fine.
Oh, heck yeah.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. One last question. There are some fans out there of the Roundtable Podcast who perhaps haven't heard of UtopiaCon, although, so help me, by the time we're done, that will have changed. What do they need to know? What's the 30-second pitch for UtopiaCon for people that might be sitting on the fence saying, I don't know, I might not go to UtopiaCon next year. I don't know. What do you say to those people?
Oh, well, I mean, if you love to read paranormal YA, then you're going to want to be here. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, it's the convention for female authors of paranormal YA and the readers who love them. So if that's you, then you want to be here because it's going to be bigger and better next year. And we've already got the date set. It's June 28th, 29th, and 30th, 2013. Right here at Skerritt Bennett, which is, we call it Hogwarts Junior. I mean, it's
a great facility.
It's such a beautiful campus. Gorgeous. And they've been nothing but wonderful and kind to us here. And it's an unconventional convention space.
Very much so.
Which is perfect for our crazy unconventional convention.
Are tickets available now?
Not today, but they will be very, very soon. And a very, very special prize, actually.
And where can our listeners go to find those?
Well, right now, the best place to go is our website, which is utopiacon.com. So it's UtopiaCon.
See what you did there? See what you did there?
UtopiaCon.com. UtopiaCon.com is the best place to find any information for this year and next year, and for tickets as well.
Outstanding. And friends, do go check that out. There's a listing of the conference schedule this year. So if you're not here, you can froth and fury at all the awesomeness that you're missing and make a solemn vow to not miss it next year. It's a gorgeous facility. An amazing group of writers and fans gathered together in a very intimate setting, a very enchanting setting, run by obviously someone who's deeply committed to not only advancing paranormal YA, but supporting the fans and the authors that make it so awesome. Janet, thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. You're so welcome. Thanks for being here.
So that was Janet Wallace.
Very cool.
Yeah. One thing, Janet is actually, she runs a social marketing company called The Social Deviants. Hmm. And you can go to thesocialdeviants.com. And let me just read you the about on this because it's very cool. Social Deviants is a thriving social marketing company that helps entrepreneurs and authors build online platforms that stand out and stand up for what they believe in, attracting raving fans and loyal clients and increasing sales.
Wow.
Yeah. And that sensibility, that everything about her and everything about the con, you know, what she talked about with, you know, everyone helps everyone else. You know, the person standing at the top of the peak extends a hand down to the person below them was very prevalent throughout the con. And clearly she does that in her business as well.
Cool. Yeah. That's, I really liked that sort of her whole impetus was to bring together these two groups that you know have a tendency to do the middle school dance thing where they stand on either side of the room and nobody initiates, you know. Yeah. So I think it's great.
Yeah, it was very cool. And yeah, I really liked what she had to say about gender roles, the fact that there was an issue of gender role treatment in the fiction.
Sure.
And are we perpetuating the stereotypes? I mean, everybody there was very aware of what was going on in the world and mm-hmm. their role in it. And their power in it. That's, I think, was the most amazing thing was you're striding through the halls of this con and you realize that as everyone's smiling, everyone's having a good time, but everyone's also very empowered.
Yeah.
And that was very palpable.
That's excellent.
Yeah. And the fact that she invokes Joss Whedon just makes her, you know, a nerd goddess. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who does is then instantly credible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had not heard that quote from Joss. I'm going to write that down. You know, why do you keep creating strong female roles? Because you keep asking that question. And that is so true across the board. So I actually have several of the authors. I stopped them in the halls and I asked them that question that I asked Janet at the end there. So let me play you a few of these, Brian, because there's some amazing authors here. And I'm going to start off with someone whose name I am going to butcher. But I have them introduce themselves and the books that they've read and where people can find them online. And then I kind of cut out the part where I ask the question and just get them right into the answer for it. So if it seems a little abrupt transition there, that's what's going on.
Excellent. So just refresh us on the wording of your question so we know exactly what they're answering.
Basically, it was a combination of what is it about YA that drives you to write in it? And what is the power of YA in the world? And I kind of waffled between the two and kind of wove it together. Just, you know, at Balticon, it kind of evolved.
Sure. Yeah.
So everybody got some variation of that basic question. And the first author that we have here is Melanie Niles. I did that wrong. It's not Niles. It's Niles. Melanie Niles. I think that's it. But here's Melanie's response. Here's her introduction and her response.
Hey, I'm Melanie Niles, and I write the Starfire Angels series. Right now I have 5 books in the Dark Angel Chronicles. Starfire Angels, which is what the main series is named after, and then Broken Wings, Crystal Tomb, Origins of Dark Angel, and Forever Dark is the most recent release. It's a young adult science fiction, actually, but a lot of people have thought that it seemed more paranormal because of the angel aspect. But it's actually that they're aliens from another world coming to Earth who happen to look like what we think of as angels because they've influenced human culture, and they can hide their wings so they can blend in while hiding from trouble on their own world. You can find out more on my website, melanienilles.com, M-E-L-A-N-I-E-N-I-L-L-E-S. I actually wrote Young Adult kind of as an accident. It just happened to fit the story, so I just ran with it and had fun with it. And I think a lot of the appeal, for me at least having written it, and then for readers too, is it's a lot of firsts. We all like to go back to those first because it's new, it's exciting, and we can relive that over and over again, whereas, you know, you get with your adult stuff and most of the characters, it's like they've done this a million times. It just doesn't have that freshness appeal of the characters living this new for the first time and just discovering a whole new world out there. It's like starting a new book. It's a whole new experience. It's like visiting a new city. It's that wonder is there. It's like, what's going to happen? It's not something we've lived in over and over and over again, and we know it, and it's just become dull. It's just crisp. It's new, and it's fresh. It's exciting.
And that was a common theme throughout a lot of these discussions. You heard Janet in the initial interview talk about firsts.
Sure. Yes, yes.
And those that's a fairly common theme. And I hadn't considered that about YA, but really that really is what it's filled with.
Right. Right. Especially in that whole coming of age concept. I see that a lot as a teacher. You have a lot of kids who unfortunately experienced a lot of their firsts very young. And then you have other kids who probably won't until they get out of high school. The vast majority of them are right there in those moments. And we tease them and we kind of, oh, ha, ha, you know, you're Twitter-peated. But I think that's true. I think it's one of those things that through our teasing, our being teachers, you know, through our teasing of them, it's almost sort of a vicarious jealousy. And so I like that. I think that's a huge appeal for YA.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Yeah. Let me go on to the next one here. This is Joanne Paget.
Hello, I'm Joanne Paget, and I've written Vampires with Camelot, Camelot's True Story, Part 1. It is a series of 4 books, and I have a website, which is vampiresofcamelot.com. I also have a Facebook fan site page, which has my video trailer, which everyone needs to check out, and that's at Vampires of Camelot, no spaces. Well, you know, I think YA is an expandable franchise as far as it's just not young adults. I mean, adults are interested in it as well. It's an escapism, and its platform is expanding to so many more genres other than just science fiction and just romance and just, you know, the first and the innocence, because there's a lot more stuff out there in the world today, and people are looking at things from different perspectives now. You know, they're in a terrible reality, and they need some escapism, and I think YA is the best way to go. The fans are very loyal. I mean, without my fans, I don't know where I would be. Literally, when I started writing my book and my process, I built my audience from my process. I literally got on there and I said, hey, I'm writing this book. What do you think of this title? And I involved my friends who involved their friends. And then it just became this overwhelming success.
And I got to point out, man, you know, Melanie Nilis doing Alien Angels and Joanne doing Vampires of Camelot. There is so much inventiveness not just retooling of existing tropes, but blazing some new trails here.
Totally.
Very inventive. And,
yeah. And it's just fun.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, and it's almost like what it reminds me of is kids playing in a sandbox and being like, oh yeah, well I have this power. Oh yeah, well I can do this. And it's so like that, you get that adrenaline rush when you're a kid and you're doing that kind of thing. And so to read something where the characters have these awesomely inventive, things. It's fun.
It really is. It really is. And it's not just the characters, but I think the authors, I mean,
totally.
I wish you could have been there. The authors were having just as much fun, I think, as their characters do, meeting with the fans and so on. And Joanne actually raised an interesting point about, you know, when her process and opening it up to her fans and more building that fan base. A lot of the authors here were indie pubbed or self pubbed. Right. And there was that strong sense. We've heard it on the roundtable dozens of times about, how fans of an author expect these days to engage with that author,
right.
That you can't just sit behind your contract and your publishing deal and not get yourself out there. You miss out. And every one of these authors was all over that in a huge, huge way.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
It was awesome. Let's see, who next do I have here? Ah, here's friends, in case you hadn't noticed, there's no particular order to these. But here, I'm just clicking and going. Here is Elizabeth Kirk, Kirk with an E on the end.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Kirk. I'm the author of More Than Magic, Semester Aboard. It's my first novel, and I'm currently working on a sequel to that, which will hopefully be out in, January of 2013. You can find me at my blog, which is Elizabeth-Kirk. Kirk has an E on the end of it, .blogspot.com. And I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/morethanmagic. Well, I think one of the biggest appeals of YA is that every age reads it. You're going to have younger readers who are more advanced who are going to the YA series, and you've got, as evidenced by this convention, a ton of older readers who are just as happy to go back and pick up those books and kind of escape back to their childhood. So
sure.
I think it's got such a wide appeal, and there's so much you can do with it.
What do you think that appeal is?
You know, I don't know, but I can't put it down when I start reading.
So why do you write YA rather than all of the other options?
Yeah, I guess it's the same reason. It's great to have just a broad audience, and if you have any kind of, there was a panel yesterday about just various world issues and writing them for teens, and there's stuff out there that it's nice to be able to get teens to see it and say, hey, you know, there's stuff going on in the world. Maybe I should pay a little more attention.
And Elizabeth raises an interesting point. There were a lot of older attendees there.
Right.
And for a first year con, it was incredibly well attended. It wasn't Dragon Con where you get 40,000 people descending on Atlanta, but it was for a first year. There were crowds of people there. There was some standing room only events.
Yeah, and that, you know, the credit needs to go to what, I'm sorry, what's her name again?
Janet.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's a huge undertaking.
Yeah. And also, you know, to the fans, the dedication.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, when Terry and I pulled into the parking lot, there were license plates from every damn where. And people had come a long way to be a part of this. I really think this is the beginning of something awesome.
Definitely.
And I can't wait to see where the con goes and how it evolves next year. And before I forget, Janet had mentioned that tickets for next year are going to be available very soon. At the time of this recording, and hell, this is going to go up in a couple of days. The tickets are out there. They're up on the utopiacon.com website, and they are $30.
Nice.
$30 for a two and a half day, three day con. And that's an awesome price. So guys, if you're in the Nashville area or a few hours away, that covers everybody, almost. Well, of course not everybody. The people in the UK maybe can't make it, but, but they should, it's worth it. But it's definitely worth checking out. Let's go on to another one here. This is L.M. Davis.
Hi, I'm L.M. Davis. I am the author of the Shifters novel series. Right now we have two books available, Interlopers, which is the first book, and Posers, which is the second book. My website is www.shiftersnovelseries.com, and you can find out more about both of the series. You can click to read excerpts from there, and you can find me on Twitter, Goodreads, and Facebook from my website. So. Well, that's a complex question.
I know. 5 minutes.
One of the things that I think about YA is that YA, particularly because of the demographic that it targets, the people who are reading it, they're at this sort of crucial moment in their life. And I think, and also the characters that you're writing about are at this crucial moment in their life, which is only the beginning of like that process of always making these choices and always with each choice making a decision about who you're going to be in the future. And so I think that that's what's interesting to me about that is that process of looking at how you become who you are. And I think that that's what resonates with not only just, you know, that core demographic that we think of in terms of age range, but also with people beyond the age range that we would think of maybe for YA. It's because it's this idea about that we're always sort of faced with these decisions and that we know that the outcome of these decisions is who are we going to be next, right? So I think that that's what's sort of interesting to me about it. And then you throw the fantasy component in, right? And it just makes it, you know, all that much more fun. But I think that that's the kind of thing that intrigues me about writing that particular kind of novel, so.
Okay. And I noticed that the series is called the Shifter series. Is that...
My characters are shapeshifters. So my main characters are fraternal twins, Nate and Larissa Pantera. And if the last name gives you any idea, they shapeshift into panthers. They are actually were-leopards, and actually a very special kind of were-leopard in that they turn into black panthers that have no spots. Nate and Larissa have always known who they are. So it's not like, okay, I turn 11 and all of a sudden I can shapeshift. So it's not that kind of transition. But I think that it's that kind of the difference between what people, for instance, in Posers, like who people think you are and what you actually are. So that kind of, like that duality that might be present in everybody, you know?
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge issue.
Not just for teens, though.
Right, exactly. And she makes a good point, because it's something that, and that's something that it seems like they're all coming back to, is that, you know, YA is not just for young adult, but there's a reason for that. And while she was talking, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know, when I was a kid, the stories that I would read, it was difficult for me to get into a book with a main character that was more than 5 or 6 years older than me. But as an adult, I can read Harry Potter and be with him the whole way.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
And the notion that Ms. Davis articulated so eloquently about the choices, about the crisis points, I mean, that's what we're talking about with the authors every time we do a workshop.
Sure.
So really, you know, while the stories may be tailored towards a younger audience, as you point out, Brian, there's stuff here for everyone, and it's not just... It's not exclusive to that particular target demographic.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, very cool stuff.
Very cool.
Let's jeté on to Ms. Chelsea Fine, whose book covers are just stunning. Holy crap.
My name is Chelsea Fine, and I am a young adult fiction writer. I wrote Sophie and Carter, that's a novella, and then I am currently writing a paranormal series, and it's called The Archers of Avalon. The first book, Anew, is out, as well as the second book, which is Awry, and all of my books are available on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can go to their websites, or you can order them through their stores. I think the primary thing that readers get from YA is the quest for self, because it's about discovering who you are and finding an identity and making mistakes and learning from mistakes, which is something we do our entire lives, but we usually only admit to it when we're looking on our past. So I think YA is perfect for that. I also, on a side note, for me personally, I like to write YA because you get to have that boy meets girl, love at first sight, sexual tension, but in almost a more innocent way. And even though, I think people really like that. People remember that. People remember the first time they fell in love. They remember their first kiss. And those are butterfly moments. And YA can capture that in a believable way.
And there are a lot of older people that read YA. And I agree with you completely in what you're describing. Why do they read it, do you think?
For the memories. My grandma reads my books. And my grandma she knows. She fell in love and she knows what it's like to be swept away. And so I think when older generations are reading YA, they are remembering what it's like to choose your heart over your head and to get swept up into something that's bigger than you or maybe bad for you. It's those wonderful mistakes, you know, they were bad for you and they damaged part of you, but you kind of don't regret them. You know, you might have only part of your heart left, but it was sort of worth it. So yeah.
Do you think we could do with a few more of those types of decisions these days?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, can I not say that? Hell yes. I think the heart is true. The heart leads you into places where you get scarred, but it makes you interesting.
And it just comes up again and again and again that the themes that are being invoked here are the same themes in every piece of fiction.
Right.
And just the fact that they're focusing on, you know, their characters and for the most part, not exclusively, but for the most part, the characters that are enacting these stories are very much of that young adult range. And so, of course, there's the empathy with the reader. But as you pointed out, man, and it's universal.
Yeah.
What do you think about her comment about memories? Is that one of the appeals, do you think?
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, okay. You know, especially like right now, I'm 33, right? Which is to people like my parents, that's super young. To people like my students, it's old as hell.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And Allie and I were looking at pictures the other day, and, you know, we're looking at pictures of us when we were in high school, and I'm going, oh my God, I can't believe how much I've changed. And suddenly I feel like an adult, and it sucks. But yeah, and so, you know, we reminisce a lot. And I think that as human beings, we spend a lot of our time reminiscing. And reading YA books as adults, I think, gives us an opportunity to kind of go back and relive vicariously through these characters things that were almost forbidden to feel.
Sure.
As adults. Sure. You know,
so awkward to feel, right, initially, and now with your maturity and age and experience, you can look back, right, on that fondly. I would actually go a step further and say not just to reminisce but also to recapture some, yes, of that excitement, yeah, and rekindle that, because so many times it's so easy to get worn down and stuck in a rut. And mm-hmm, as you say, you see those pictures of your younger self and it's like, God, I've gotten old.
Right.
And reading these tales that are beautifully drawn and obviously are dealing with issues that every good piece of literature does, mm-hmm, not only just reminisces, but rekindles and reawakens that youthful wonder and excitement and vigor.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's part of its biggest draw.
Yep. Yep. You know? I think so.
Yeah.
I think we,
yeah,
found something, definitely, cool there.
Absolutely.
Let me call up another. We got a couple more here. This is Cindy Lawson. A very cool lady. Listen, check out what she's got to say.
Okay.
My name is Sydney Lawson. I am the author of The Last of the Fallen trilogy, and you can find that on my website, thelastofthefallen.com. I figured I'd make it sweet and easy to the point. It's about angels and heaven as a hierarchy and dystopia. So it's a new take on heaven and religious aspects with a twist for YA readers. And I have been writing it for a while now, and I'm up to book two, so hopefully the weirdos will like it and wait around for book three. Well, I think that young adult characters, and not the readers, but the characters in the books, have such a story to tell. That is such a pivotal point in anyone's life. When your hormones are going crazy, you don't know how to feel, you hate your parents, you love your parents, you're falling in and out of relationships with friends, with boyfriends and girlfriends, and you don't know where your place is in the world. And I think that anyone can relate to that. Anyone and everyone wants to find their place, their purpose, you know, their desire, their passion. And teenagers do that better than anyone because they go through maybe three passions in a week. We don't know. I didn't know. And to be able to write about that and put it in a fantastical setting, that it blows my mind because it's so much fun and you can make your own world. And that's my passion. So I found my passion through having characters find theirs. And I think that the YA genre in general is bringing so much variety, and it's inspiring the TV generation, the movie generation, the media generation to get passionate about something that could have been a dead art. Literature could have fallen by the wayside, but now that people are bringing in love triangles with werewolves and vampires and people want to read it, it may not be the best sometimes, but it's sparking something in kids that needs to be sparked. And I think that the YA genre is the gateway to the rest of literature that kids need to read.
Right on, sister.
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
crap.
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I'm intrigued that a YA author is offering heaven as a dystopia. Right. That's awesome. I mean, I could write that story for the spec fic crowd and it would fit just as well.
Sure.
But sure. But as she says, the passions of the readers is three times a week. Does that bear out, do you think, with your experiences?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Kids have such, not only do they switch their passions so quickly, but they're, you know, they've been brought up in this world that is so immediate, so now, you know? I mean, at their fingertips, they can have whatever they want. And so it's ridiculous to try to get them to memorize anything anymore. Not only because their attention span is so short, but because there's no point to it. They have a smartphone right in front of them. They can look it up.
Right. Right.
You know, so it's kind of like the there's a big conversation around handwriting and should we be teaching handwriting? Oh, and one of the big things against it is that they don't use it in anything once they leave high school. You know, I can't remember the last time that I actually had to write something that someone else had to read and write it by hand. Everything, applications, everything is done through typing. And so, you know, they have so much immediacy right at their fingertips all the time. And they freak out. You take away their cell phone and they just freak out because they can't immediately contact their friend if they have a thought. You know, there's no such thing as I'm going to write it down and tell them later.
Wow.
And so I think passions are the same way. I think she's absolutely dead on that, you know, a kid on Monday might decide that they want to be an astronaut and on Thursday decide that they want to be a brain surgeon.
And both times be utterly committed and dedicated to it.
Completely.
For as long as that passion lives. And
yeah, as long as it doesn't involve math.
Oh, God, no. Right. Sorry to all the math majors out there. But yeah, nobody wants to do that. But wiring those passions, as she observed, into literature, into reading, into that experience, whether you're doing it on a Kindle or a cell phone or a dead tree book, I couldn't agree with her more that's definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
Definitely yeah, good absolutely. Stuff. And I've got one more here. Cool. This is Leanna Renee Heber. I'm saving her for last because not only is she a published author and a very successful one, but she was also one of the actors in Auror's Tale.
Oh, cool.
Yes. And I had the opportunity to sit down with her and the rest of the creative team, not the entire team, but most the ones that were there for an interview, which was very cool. And we will release as a separate podcast later on this week. But it was very cool to see someone who was an actor who's also a successful author. It's a theme, man. I'm telling you. There's going to be more and more. But here's Leanna.
Hello, I am Leanna Renee Heber. I am the author of the Strangely Beautiful series and currently, and I'm very excited about the Magic Most Foul series that I'm working on right now. Darker Still, book one in the saga, is currently available wherever books are sold, in trade paperback and across all digital platforms. And it's set in 1880s New York City. It's full of dark magic, lots of curses, lots of adventure, action, and pretty dresses, and historic New York. So there's something for everyone. And also I'm interested in the way that historical fiction can be reimagined for a new audience, especially with a very strong female heroine that I'm very excited about. So the sequel releases in November. You can go to my website, leannareneeheber.com. That is LeannareneeHieber.com. And I'm on Twitter a lot at Leanna Renee. The reason I chose young adult is because it sort of chose me. I feel that I can be at my most expansive in the young adult genre because we all understand a coming-of-age story and we all understand a hero's journey. And young adult is so much about the hero's journey. And I mean that across all gender platforms as well. It's not just, you know, the hero in terms of that traditional sense. We're able to reimagine that in a lot of new ways now as modern authors. And I love doing that in classical ways. And I feel like young adult really does cross all the genres and can tap into all the genres in a way that, for me, as a cross-genre author, I write historical fantasy. I write historical paranormal. It has mystery elements. It has paranormal elements. It has romance elements. It has fantasy and adventure and all the various things, and also a significant amount of horror as well in my stuff. And I feel that young adult actually is the best umbrella through which you can use all these different genres to be telling the hero's journey. So it's a relatable genre, and also I think it's where some of the most exciting new literature is happening in this current climate. I think there's a lot of energy in the market right now. There's a lot of different things being done. I think that the fans add an amazing energy to this whole process too. There's a reciprocity between author and reader that's really, really precious in young adult, because the excitement and the fandom is so honest and unabashed and passionate and enthusiastic. We have such an enthusiastic readership thanks to people like J.K. Rowling. And I value her so much for that. She is my idol for, you know, opening up literature again for literally a cross-generation of people and building young readers like no modern author has done for a very long time. And I credit her with that. And I'm so excited for what that has birthed, because then people have taken and run with that, many other authors across the spectrum. And we all benefit from all of that.
And I can tell you, Brian, that she always talks like that.
I just got mind blown.
I know, mind blown, and not a single right. So respect.
How does she do that?
I don't know. I have no clue, because clearly I have an issue with that. Right. She's a professional on every level.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
Yeah. And what struck me, just as she was saying that just now, it occurred to me, she's talking about the YA crowd going through the hero's journey and how universal that is. Mm-hmm. But really, when you think about it, you know, while you can wrap the hero's journey just about any story, it's not until we get to those early teen years that the relevance and the resonance of our lives has elevated to a point where the hero's journey makes sense, where the choices that we're making have such import and such weight that it actually is mythic and has that level. So it really is. It's the first hero's journey, our first of many.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's also sort of an element of a ticking time clock with
how so
that age group, that suddenly they start to realize they're in a position where in just a few short years, they leave the nest. They're going to be on their own. They have to start making decisions about their career, about their future, about all of these different things. And so that's in the back of their head while all of these other passions are going on. And there's that, it's the first instance of, I feel like I need to be something special. Like something special needs to happen to me. I need to be that one. I need to be the chosen one. And I'm getting closer to that point where I'm going to be kicked out of my house and have to find a job, and it hasn't happened to me yet.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it happens to Harry Potter when he's 11.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's a book that I read, The Blade of the Poisoner, where this kid, his village gets burned down, but he's like grabbed by this group that says, hey, you know, you're destined for greatness, and suddenly he can control the elements, and you know, it's a really cool book. But I read it when I was like 8 or 9, and I remember by the time I was like 13 or 14, I'm going, okay, where's my village burning down? When is this going to happen? Because it better happen soon, you know? And now I'm 33 and I'm sitting here going, well, shit, it wasn't me. It was the kid sitting next to me. But I think they have that, they have that sense at that age where it's like, well, if it's going to happen, it better happen soon. And so they're reading more about these characters where it is happening to these other characters at that age.
Now, let me ask you just riff on this just a little bit. Isn't that an illusion, though? I mean, it doesn't have to happen right now. And I think a lot of, personally, I remember going through those same experiences and feeling that urgency. But if somebody had just sat down and told me, it's like, dude, chill. You know, go work for a year or two before you go to college. Blah, blah, blah. You know, you don't have to follow this roadmap that everybody else is laying out for you. You can make other choices.
You wouldn't listen.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
At that age, they don't. You can ask them, you can say, what are you going to have for lunch? And they're not thinking that far ahead.
Wow. Okay.
It's now. It has to be right now. Absolutely right now. And that's what I was talking about with the cell phone thing.
Yeah.
You know, you take away the cell phone and it's like, oh my God, I'm going to die.
And contemporary technology has kind of reinforced that too, that immediacy. Yeah. So.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay.
Totally.
All right. I'll yield to your wisdom.
You'll chew on it for a little bit.
I'll chew on a little bit, but I'll yield to your wisdom on that. You've got more experience with it than I do. And that just, again, dovetails directly into the power and the vitality of this genre.
Absolutely.
So that, my friends, was UtopiaCon 2012. Tickets are on sale right now for UtopiaCon 13 at a drastically reduced price. You can go to utopiacon.com. That's UtopiaCon.com. We'll have links in the liner notes. Check it out. Make the scene. Like I say, even though YA is certainly not my wheelhouse, Brian, it was invigorating to be among not only so many creative and inspired authors, but as was pointed out several times by the interviews with the authors, the fans are vital and excited and passionate as well.
Definitely.
And it was just an amazing experience. I certainly intend to go back next year. I'm going to get my tickets now. Going to take my granddaughter with us, hopefully. Cool. She couldn't be here this year because of timing, but next year, hopefully, now that we know the dates, we're going to go ahead and nail that bad boy down and get her into this, because I think she's just going to go bonkers.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So friends, you've got all the web addresses, you've got the names and the people. Reach out to these folks. They're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they obviously have web presences. Make a connection with them. Make a connection with the authors. They are wonderful people that are welcome to new people, new fans, making connections with them, and just explore it. There's some vital goodness, writerly goodness to be had here. Any closing thoughts, Bri, before we wrap this up?
No, I really like that you do this, that, you know, for like, this is the second con. I still have, I don't want to say it that way. I haven't been to a con yet.
Well, you're going to go.
That I desperately need to, but every time that I look them up, they're like, Colorado is pretty like void of cons, but yeah, but I love that you do it, and I think it's a very cool service. So that's my final thought, is a thank you to you.
Well, and we'll continue to do this. I think this is useful to our listeners, to our fans, and to people that are into writing, which is, of course, what we're all about.
Absolutely.
Friends, stay tuned. Tomorrow, a workshop episode drops on the Roundtable Podcast. The day after that, Wednesday, we're going to drop another interview from Utopia Con. This one was with the Auror's Tale people. If you're not up on the Auror's Tale scene, these guys are bringing fan fiction to a whole new level set in the Harry Potter universe. So please definitely tune in for that and all the awesome goodness on the roundtable. Until we talk again, stay frosty, enjoy yourselves, find what you're looking for, and look for awesome stuff. Brian?
Go right.
Go right. Absolutely. Until then, guys, take care. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a special UtopiaCon edition of the Roundtable Podcast, released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. Visit creativecommons.org for more information. The dates for next year's UtopiaCon are Friday, June 28th through Sunday, June 30th, 2013. Tickets are on sale now at www.utopiacon.com. And for a limited time, they're only $30. We'd like to thank Janet Wallace, Elizabeth Kirk, Chelsea Fine, L.M. Davis, Leanna Renee Heber, Joanne Paget, Sydney Lawson, and Melanie Nillis for sharing their thoughts and insights with us. It helped Brian and I get a better understanding of the YA genre, and we really appreciate it. And for everyone else, thanks for tuning in.